The Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt is powered by Patreons like you. From 5 cents to 50 bucks, every contribution helps Tom and company produce fresh episodes of Essential Tech News. To learn more and support the show, visit patreon.com/acedetect. And thanks for listening.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, August 8th, 2014. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, co-host of Sword and Laser and woman about the internet, Veronica Belmont. How's it
Hello.
Going?
Hello. It's good. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thank you for joining me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me on this fine Friday.
We just did a Sword and Laser on Tuesday, and you're still willing to join me on Daily Tech News Show.
I'm not sick of you yet. Not sick of you yet.
Not quite yet, but we'll solve that
soon
by the end of the show. We have Len Peralta here as well to referee and illustrate the episode. Len, we have some kittens in store by the end of this show.
I'm
not trying to spoil what you're drawing, but I'm just saying.
No, I'm really excited. And I'm also ever been on a show together, first off. And it's nice to be on a show with her.
Is that right? Never?
I don't think we've ever been on a show together.
You didn't do a Geek a Week podcast interview?
We did.
Yeah, but that's different. I mean, like, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying.
Right, right. That was
it was the first time for DTNS.
Interviewing Veronica. Right.
No, and we were on, you were just, that was at, I saw you doing this when we were at, what's it called, Nerdtacular.
So
I wasn't on the show, but I was in the audience, and I was, harassing you guys over the chat room.
Oh, that's right.
So this is one for the wiki, right?
Yeah. Here we go. Let's start off with some headlines. Wednesday, Bloomberg reported a Chinese procurement list drafted by the Chinese National Development and Reform Commission, along with the Ministry of Finance, had dropped Apple products, meaning government money could not be used in China to buy them. We mentioned that here on the show. Well, Recode reports that the list was only for energy-saving products, and China's Central Government Procurement Center, China's Finance Ministry, and Apple itself all say the company never applied to be on the list in the first place. There are many government procurement lists in China, and government money can still be used to purchase Apple products, even if they are not on the energy-saving list. Apple products are certified as energy-saving in China, but Apple has not applied to be included on that procurement list. So no controversy, no conspiracy.
GigaOm reports that Russia's prime minister has signed an order requiring users of public Wi-Fi to register with a full name confirmed by personal identification. Simple, right? The Russian Communications Ministry clarified this only applies to hotspots set up by network operators. Okay. Oh, and also, Moscow's IT chief claims it only applies access points provided by Russia's postal service and, Tom, say this word.
Izvestia.
Izvestia reported hotspot operators must log hardware identifiers, keep it for 6 months, and register with the telecoms regulator. So totally simple.
Yeah, totally simple. And then people are like, no, that Izvestia report is totally wrong. It's confusing. But apparently you have to show your passport if you want to get on the public Wi-Fi.
Whoa.
PC Mag reports the United States Patent and Trademark Office has rejected multiple claims of Apple's 172 patent. That's the one about autocomplete. Apple can still provide more information in its defense, so this isn't a settled matter yet. However, Samsung was quick to alert District Court Judge Lucy Ko of the decision as it affects Claim 18 of the patent, which Judge Ko had ruled Samsung had infringed, and that was part of the settlement or part of the decision where Samsung had been ordered to pay $119 million to Apple in that case. So even though Apple and Samsung have declared patent peace everywhere else in the world, they're still fighting it out here in the U.S.
It ain't over yet. Twitch CEO Emmett Shear came away from his Reddit AMA with a few changes for Twitch's new policies on VOD and copyrighted music. Highlights, the only video that can be saved indefinitely under the new policy, can now be any length instead of being limited to 2 hours. Also, Twitch is deploying an appeal button to make it easier to dispute being flagged for copyrighted music. Under the new policy, an entire 30-minute block of archive video would be muted if it's flagged by Audible Magic system as infringing.
We'll talk a little bit more about that in particular in a little bit. Just a note real quick, too, that PC Mag's Max Eddy has made special mention of a talk at Black Hat by security analyst Dan Greer called Cybersecurity as Real Politic. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. It's 55 minutes. Apparently, according to Eddie, is more philosophical than most Black Hat speeches and puts forth 10 suggestions for the future that the internet is facing now that it is no longer a hobby, and as Eddie puts it, is a tool for the projection of power by governments. So looking forward to watching that. Thought I'd mention it.
Recode reports that the rumors of Alibaba's investment in Snapchat can be dismissed. At least that's the rumor they hear about the rumor. Recode sources say talks did take place between the two companies, but they have been over a long time now. Forbes reported Snapchat authorized the sale of 17.4 million preferred shares in a Delaware filing made Monday.
And time for some news from you. These are things submitted on our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. More than 3,000 people get in there every day and hang out, talk to each other, post some links, vote them up, vote them down. Let us know what stuff they're interested in. It really helps me put together the show. Habituela Condulce, for instance, posted the CNET article that Yahoo's new chief information security officer told Black Hat attendees Thursday that Yahoo Mail will be encrypted end-to-end sometime in 2015. If you're like, that sounds familiar, Google's doing the same thing. Well, Yahoo's encryption will be compatible with Gmail's, meaning email between the two services would truly be encrypted end-to-end, even if it's sent from one service to the other. Yahoo will release their encryption source code sometime this fall. So get in there and pick it apart. Help them make it more secure.
Yeah, interesting post here. Arachtor pointed out the Digital Trends article about U.S. Congressional Librarian David Gibson coming across a DVD-R that contained complete source code and assets for Duke Nukem Critical Mass for the PlayStation Portable. The disc was found during inventory. A game of the same name was released for Nintendo DS in 2011, but Gibson says this PSP version is substantially different. The acquisition provides an unprecedented look into the design process.
It
How
also
interesting.
Probably still isn't very good. Who knows? Maybe it's great. Maybe it's amazing.
He did say substantially different.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
SP Sheridan posted the Recode story, quoting CBS CEO Les Moonves, saying during the company's earnings call that CBS's TV studio will be producing more and more shows for more and more outlets, including major streaming companies and other emerging distributors. A CBS spokesman confirmed to Recode that Moonves was indeed talking about selling shows to the likes of Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu. Now, before that surprises you too much, if you don't know, CBS does make shows for other broadcast networks. Like, I think American Idol shoots at the CBS television studios, and they even directly produce shows for other networks sometimes. So that wouldn't be too crazy for them to go, hey, we'll take money from Netflix, Amazon, anybody.
Your money's good here.
Yeah, no kidding.
What they're saying. Arachtor also let us know about the next web story that Facebook is cracking down on how developers encourage users to click the like button. Games made for the Facebook platform may not offer rewards or bonus content in order to get people to like their Facebook page. Developers will also be required to disclose any in-app charges in their app's description. That is like really the only reason why you would like something is to get stuff
you're
back.
Supposed to like something because you actually like it, Veronica.
No, that's not how this new internet economy works, Tom.
Right, and Facebook's changing that. They're like, no, we're going to get back to the true nature of likes. When you click on a little GIF of a thumb on the internet, it should mean something.
GIF, Tom.
Or GIF. Whatever. Well, let's not have that fight right now. I'm not going to like that fight.
Oh. But you know what you do like?
What?
Tell me what you do like, Tom, for the plug of the day.
I like this little book we helped put together. We didn't write it. We wrote a couple pages in it, but it was written by 20 people in the Sword and Laser audience. And if you are into science fiction and fantasy, you're missing out if you don't check this out. You can get an ebook or you can get a print book. Doesn't matter. Swordandlaser.com/store is the place to go. But these are up and coming writers. There's some great stuff in here. And if you don't want to be left behind by the future, you probably should pick it up.
And in fact, we're going to be publishing a page later, either today or Monday, that will allow you to get a free entire story from the Sword and Laser anthology just for signing up for our newsletter. So hopefully you guys will enjoy that as well.
Yeah, for the skeptics out there, like, I don't believe you, Tom. Show me one of these stories for free. There you go. We're going to do it. So there, took that objection out of your mouth, didn't we? Swordandlaser.com/store is the place to go for that. All right, let's talk about this Twitch tweaks thing. I mentioned this in the headlines yesterday when they first announced it. For those who may have missed it, they're going to scan archived video for copyrighted music. If they find copyrighted music, or rather if Audible Magic, the company they're contracting, finds copyrighted music, they will mute an entire 30-minute chunk because they're scanning it in 30-minute chunks. So it's not just muting the part of the video where the music is, they take out your whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, here's where it gets weird on the music side. Elizabeth Baker, who's the chief consul, she's the lawyer for Twitch, wrote in her initial post, this includes in-game and ambient music. And apparently people with actual copyrighted music coming from the game they were playing were seeing their games taken down. However, on the subreddit, Emmett Shear says, quote, "We have absolutely no intention of flagging songs due to original in-game music. If that's happening, and it appears it is, it's a problem, and we will investigate and try to fix it." What's your best guess what's going on here?
So, where is this breakdown of communication happening? I mean, Emmett Shear did a AMA yesterday that was really answered a lot of questions. And now, of course, they're going back and changing some of these policies based on the feedback that they've received, which has been overwhelmingly negative, and I think for good reason. You know, a lot of people, as you probably discussed yesterday, are saying that the reason for all of this cleanup is because they're gearing up for an acquisition with Google. Of course, there was a really great response to that argument that I saw over on Google Plus, actually, from an Ars Technica writer about how that doesn't really make any sense, because if you're going to be acquired by Google, you know, having space and you know, having content isn't really a problem that you're thinking about. If you're acquired by Google, suddenly all of those issues no longer become issues because you have basically endless space to store all of this content on their servers. I think the argument people are making against that is that, you know, they don't want to come into an acquisition with potential legal issues that are, you know, piggybacking. So they're doing due diligence to try to prevent any of that from affecting the deal. And then we had the whole thing about, are you going to take out clips from games? Because then suddenly that defeats the entire purpose of the platform.
Right. Archived videos or highlights were a thing that you could store indefinitely. And even under the new system, where they're like, you can only archive videos for 14 days. We're increasing it from 3 days to 14 days for everybody, or 60 days for partners or people who pay for subscriptions. Mm-hmm. But that's it. There is no more keep my stream forever. However, you could do highlights and keep those forever. Originally, they said those can only be 2 hours long. And people who do speed throughs were like, you've just totally screwed me. And they have changed that. They put a post up today, Twitch said that highlights can now be of any length, saved indefinitely, as well as exported to YouTube, which to me is like, well, okay, so then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take every show I do, if I'm this kind of person, I'm not going to do this personally, but I could take every show I do, make the entire show a highlight, and then save it indefinitely.
Yeah, so that's one workaround. I'm not really sure what's going on over there. I spoke to someone the other day last night, with someone who has it also on good authority that this deal is going to happen, from a competing company who knows people who work at Twitch. And so, you know, I think this deal is probably going to happen. I don't know what it will mean for Twitch users, myself included, moving forward. But, you know, if they have more storage, more bandwidth, more capabilities, money to back them up in case they do have any legal troubles going forward, like, that might be really great for Twitch. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, is this all going to just be absorbed into YouTube?
Yeah. I don't think so. And Jordan sent me that same Google Plus link that you were talking about, saying, hey, why wouldn't Twitch use Google's content ID? Why would they get rid of archives? And my thoughts back to him were that it makes sense in advance of a YouTube acquisition for Twitch to say, archiving is now on YouTube. Because that's essentially what they're saying. I mean, it changes a little bit now that they've said, well, you can have highlights of any length. Archiving is still going on. But Twitch made a point of saying this has nothing to do with us having enough space. It's not us trying to free up space. This is about performance. And we want to increase the performance and make it easier to see live streams and archive streams on mobile devices in different formats. We want to stop using FLV. All of that kind of thing, to me, just reeks of we're about to merge with another company that does things a different way, and we need to change our specs to meet
that. We're streamlining our tech specs and making it easier to be absorbed under this new platform. I kind of agree with that mindset. It kind of actually makes me happy in a way. Like, I'm not as embedded into the Twitch community as many other gamers are. You know, I use Google Hangouts, I use YouTube Live, I also use Twitch for stuff. It just depends on use case. In my mind, I'd actually be happier if everything was funneled down the same pipeline so I could have all of my users, all my viewers in one place. But I know that isn't how a lot of Twitch users are thinking. They have this very specific, highly specialized community that they really enjoy. And I don't know how they're going to feel about opening it up to the wider YouTube audience. So TBD.
Yeah. And the other thing about the YouTube audience is this is exactly what I would expect a company to have to do for Google's lawyers to sign off on an acquisition regarding the copyrighted music. Because Google's lawyers are famously paranoid about copyright lawsuits.
Just look at all the takedown notices we see on YouTube all the time for this kind of stuff.
And I could see
the less
Twitch
they have to deal with that, the better.
Content ID is not going to work for us. It's way too hostile. And then Google saying, well, fine, if you want to have an acquisition, then you need to figure out your own content ID system, which would then lead to what we're seeing here. I do think, though, that all of this presages, if there is an acquisition in the works, that Twitch will remain Twitch and push archiving to YouTube and hopefully help YouTube's live service kind of have some more coherence. Because remember, Twitch is like, we're gaming, we're video games. If you don't do video games, we don't want you on our platform. And YouTube could be for everybody else.
Well, I also think about it in terms of losing Justin.tv.
Yes.
I mean, that would be a indirect competition with YouTube Live and with Hangouts and things like that. So it makes sense that they would drop that completely because there would be no sense in having both of those properties under the same umbrella. But Twitch, yes, highly specialized. And also, I think the Twitch community would be really upset to lose their usernames and have to go into a verified like real name situation. Although I guess Google is a little less intense about that now. They're letting people use not their real name for Google Plus profiles and commenting. But that's definitely like combining all of these user IDs and usernames is going to be another major problem I think the Twitch users would have if this went through. So
yeah.
Maybe keeping it apart would save some of that issue.
I do think that Emmett Shear in that Reddit AMA came off as somebody who's between a rock and a hard place.
He's like backpedaling as fast as possible.
He desperately wants to do the right things by his audience. Like, I really do believe that he is in tune with his audience and he is not able to. He, for whatever reason, we can speculate all day about acquisitions or whatever has led them to this point. Maybe it's a music company has been, putting the knee on him, threatening a lawsuit. He's like, no, I'm sorry. We have to do this. I'm trying to make it as friendly as possible, but it's just going to happen no matter what.
Yeah.
And that leads into a larger conversation about the state of copyright law, which we don't have weeks to talk about. So we'll probably skip that for now. But yeah. I mean, you and I have been talking about that for decades now, practically.
It feels that way, yes.
Yeah. All right, let's switch gears because it wouldn't be a DEF CON Black Hat B-Sides week without a little news out of one of those. And we've got some news from DEF CON. Patrick Beja just dropped this in the lineup this morning. And then I saw TV's Egon had submitted it on the subreddit. So I'm like, well, this obviously has to happen. Gene Bransfield created a cat collar with a SparkCore chip, custom firmware, Wi-Fi card, mini GPS, and a battery for less than $100. Put it on a cat.
He did not put it in a cat. Big difference.
It was very humane. He put the collar around a cat and then sent the cat off to scan and map Wi-Fi access points. He tried it first with a cat named Skitzy, who was a total failure because the cat never left the porch.
Not effective.
So then Coco became the next test cat and found in Coco's ramblings four routers that used an old, easily broken form of encryption, WEP encryption, and another four that were entirely unprotected. So the collar has been dubbed War Kitty.
War Kitty. They have to be more kitty.
Kitty.
War Kitty.
And at his DEF CON talk, Gene Bransfield explained how anyone could make this.
It's like $100 or something like that, less than $100. You stick in a SparkCore chip, custom firmware. I think it's Arduino based, GPS and a battery. It's good to go.
Yeah, little bit of gumption and coding elbow grease is necessary, but
and then you need a brave cat too. You need a wandering cat.
You need a wandering cat. You need an outdoor cat, first of all. I mean, unless you've got a really large apartment building, you're gonna let it loose in. But
yeah, that would be weird.
Yeah. No, it's gotta be an outdoor cat. Gotta be a rangy one. My cat growing up, Patches, would have been great for this. We saw her like cross town sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, she went all over the place.
Devo, my cat's an indoor cat that's turned into an outdoor cat, but she's embracing it completely.
Yeah.
She goes and hangs out.
Embracing her outdoor cat. So you're gonna try this?
She's too tiny. She's like tiny kitten sized.
Yeah, you can't make this collar smaller right now.
Right.
Like,
then
it's kind of as small as it can get, I think, because the chip's the size of the chip, right?
But I would put it on my dog Bodega and have her. For listeners who don't know, I don't get to name my dog. Her name came as Bodega because she's a guide dog puppy. I did not name her after a wine cellar. Or did I? And I could put it on her collar and just walk around. But then at the same time, then I'm basically just war driving. You know, just walking, war walking.
I think that's a nice fork of this project. Would be war dog walking.
Take the chip from a Fitbit.
Yeah.
Build that into the collar. Then suddenly you've got a pedometer built in, an accelerometer.
A pawdometer in this case.
A pawdometer. So you're really combining all these great technologies and getting a fantastic workout.
Right.
You're finding weak.
Oh, I thought it was good because it's going to be on the dog. It would track the dog's steps.
You could do that too. I mean, they have that. That also exists as a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we hear back from you about your particular war kittens and dogs and whatever else. I don't know.
Yeah. Show us your war kittens.
War hamsters. Whatever you got.
Don't do that. The war hamsters would be eaten by the war kittens. It'd be all out warfare.
feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Seriously, if you do this, let us know. We want to know about it. Check out our calendar. Monday, August 11th through the 13th is the Game Developers Conference in Cologne, Germany. It's the GDC Europe, obviously, because it's in Cologne. I think Terpster will be there. So if you're going, keep an eye out for him. TechCrunch Beijing is August 11th and 12th. And finally, Monday, we'll get earnings for Rackspace and Priceline.
Yay.
Our pick of the day is from me today. I am going to throw out caffeine. I would throw out caffeine, the molecule that is in things like coffee and chocolate. But in this case, I'm actually talking about the software. I use it on all of my computers to keep the screen alive. Now, I know there's ways to do this. Mm-hmm. Like in OS X, you can do a hot corner and stuff. But caffeine gives you extra options for, like, I just want it to be up for 30 minutes. I used to sit here. I don't know if anybody noticed. In the early days of Daily Tech News Show, I'd have to always look down and, like, keep the screen alive. And I don't have to do that. I just say, keep it up for an hour, caffeine, so that I don't have to worry about it going to sleep and having a screensaver. And it's not just for OS X. There's one for Linux, and there's one for Windows as well. They're all developed by different people. But if you have a situation where you're like, yeah, I really wish I could keep that screen live, or I have to keep, you know, hitting the mouse to keep it live, check it out. I'll have links to all of them. There's the Lighthead one. There's a Launchpad one for Linux. Lighthead is for OS X. And Jorn Software has the one for Windows. And you can find links to that and all my picks at dailytechnewsshow.com/picks. Do you use any of these caffeine things?
I don't. You know, I did caffeine for
Texilla.
Texilla segment.
Because when I was looking up the links today, I actually saw the link
to
the video segment. Yeah.
Why you no include it on the list of links, Tom?
Because these are links to the software directly to get it.
Maybe some people are interested in my personal review.
Gina Trapani reviewed it before you did on Lifehackers. Just saying. So then I'd have to put Gina's in there because
I probably found it on Lifehacker because I read that.
You probably stole it from Gina.
I probably stole it from Gina
all the time at CNET.
Because Lifehacker is the best.
Yeah. Check it
but
out.
But no, I do not currently use it. No.
Well, you should.
I have too many things, Tom.
Time for some messages before we get out of here. Andrew wrote in. Said it occurred to me that U-Beam, we talked about this. Did you hear about U-Beam?
No.
There was an article from Nick Milton in the New York Times about this company. They're still, I know, they're still 2 years out probably from consumer level, but they have an intriguing way of doing wireless power using ultrasonics. We've had a ton of people poking holes in it, and I'm telling them, like, you're right to poke holes. All we know is what's in the patents and what their claims are. I haven't got my hands on one yet. Andrew wrote in and said, it occurred to me that U-Beam is a modification of standard audio equipment. Microphones take sound waves and turn them into electrical signals that are then turned back into sound waves on the other end by amplifiers and speakers. We actually generate an electric current with our voices anytime we speak into a microphone. The brilliance of U-Beam is that Ms. Perry realized she could put a mic into a device and use the current it generates to charge the battery. Like Fraser mentioned, efficiency is going to be important, but for devices like phones and maybe even laptops, something as low as 50% transfer rate might be enough. U-Beam is an exciting concept, and I hope it pans out and becomes an open standard or at least readily available for licensing. If it turns into a proprietary technology, I might cry. That's a good point, Andrew. I would like it to work. And a lot of people are skeptical that it would work at all. Some people are like, science would prevent this. I'm like, no, she's actually demonstrated it. And it wasn't a rigged demo at D9 several years ago, but she got a very small effect. The whole question is whether she can scale it up to make a big enough effect that it will actually be useful to people. That's kind of what we're waiting on. And the patents seem to bear that out, but you know, putting something in a patent is much different than making it work in practice.
Yeah, that's really cool though. I'll have to read up more on that.
Yeah, and the idea is that you would just have it, because it's sound, in a room, ambient, above your hearing level, and any device that was compatible with it, like, you know, if your phone had a adapter on it, would just constantly be charging.
So yeah.
you'd be topped up as long, you know, anytime, if you spent any amount of time.
It's like ambient charging.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And she, you know, and ever since the beginning of this, I think 2009, she's wanted to have like this in coffee shops, in airports, you know, any place that you would need charging. That way you wouldn't have to be plugging in all the
time. But Tom, won't it cause cancer?
Well,
I just assume that's what everyone will say.
Right. And Fraser pointed out that, you know, this is safer than microwaves. Not that microwaves are bad in the air. But if you get close to a microwave transmitter, that can be problematic. And if ultrasound was at a certain frequency, it could be problematic too. But sound mostly is safe.
Mostly.
At below certain decibel levels. Mm-hmm. So Dave Hayer on Twitter said, I find heads-up displays in cars very useful for directions to see which episode I'm listening to. And he sent a picture along with it showing him listening to a Daily Tech News Show.
What? That's episode. So cool.
Because we were talking about this particular, I think it was a Kickstarter. It was some kind of crowdfunding.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, for this sort of thing. And I guess Dave has his own version.
Yeah, how did he make that?
I don't know.
Is that a product? Because I didn't think anything like that was actually on the market yet. But
I can't tell if he's really in a car either. But
he looks like he's in a car.
I guess it's round and it's concave.
It's not backwards either, so that's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, Jenny Josephson, our producer, who's off today, was very skeptical that this could be safe. I think Dave is trying to rest those fears. Like, no, I use it all the time.
I think that's the big fear everyone has about heads-up displays in cars. You know, some people say they're safer because you're still looking on the road. You're facing forward and not turning your head to look at a display on the center console. But at the same time, it's still crap happening in your field of vision while you should be concentrating 100% on the road. So,
anything
lesser of two evils.
I mean, I'm split on it because you know me, I'm old fashioned. I'm like, you should never talk on a phone in a car, whether it's hands-free or not, because it's taking part of your brain away that should be paying attention to the road, and you're driving a large vehicle that can kill people. However, this is no different. Like, you need information like your speedometer, right? And you need to be able to look at it. This is almost safer because it's up there. I guess it all depends on what you're using it for. Don't use it to read a book.
No, don't e-book it.
Yeah.
That'd be a bad idea.
All right. We are at the end of our show, and Len Peralta has been busily illustrating the ultimate war kite.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, my gosh, Len.
Here she is. This is the war kite. Big nod. I've been really I picked up Scotty Young's Daily Grind sketchbook. So I've highly influenced by Scotty Young. So this is an homage to Scotty and you know, Tank Girl and all that stuff. But
yeah,
War Kite.
I can see this Tank Girl influence there, yeah, for sure.
This is behold.
War Kite has some goggles on, an anarchist symbol on the belly. Obviously a rocket alongside. What is that? Yeah. A Dremel on top of it?
No, you know what? Yeah, I got to remember that you're looking for a Wi-Fi signal, right? So yeah. That's sort of, you know, looking for
it's
that.
An antenna.
Oh, it's the dish. I got it.
Yeah,
it's the
dish,
little antenna looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, so. Yeah. In the full motion, the anime of this, obviously it'll be rotating.
Exactly.
In the cartoon, the inevitable cartoon for War Kite.
That's right. We look forward in Adult Swim, sure.
I am looking forward to the adventures of War Kite that you must now write and put out.
Oh my gosh, this would be a great webcomic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. That would be fantastic. And as usual, LenPeraltaStore.com if you want to see it and buy it.
Yes, it is up there right now. As a matter of fact, it's available for purchase, and they look they look fantastic. So definitely go pick one up for yourself.
You know, with that rocket, War Kid, it looks like the nemesis of Cosmo the dog.
Oh yes. It's all Guardians of the Galaxy, all Marvel Universe. So.
New villain alert.
Yeah. Cosmo, watch out.
By the way, somebody noticed that it is kind of based off of Grumpy Cat a little bit. So.
A little bit. There's a frown there.
Secret Identity, possibly? Who knows?
Possibly.
Len, that is amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
LenPeraltaStore.com. And Veronica Belmont, thank you. VeronicaBelmont.com to keep up with what Veronica's doing. Twitter.com/Veronica. And, of course, we do the Sword and Laser podcast at SwordandLaser.com. Anything in particular to plug for the peoples?
Let's see. I don't think anything in particular other than the anthology, which we've already kind of talked about on the show. But, yeah, all our shows are over on boingboing.net/category/podcast if you want to check them out over there. We just did our kickoff of The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss in episode 186. So if you're interested in reading along with us, definitely check that episode out.
SwordandLaser.com. Thank you to our patrons at patreon.com/acedetect who make the show possible. 4,233 of you are out there supporting the show every month, and we seriously appreciate it. It is what continues to allow us to do the show. There are several ways to support the show now. We've diversified a little. So to get the link to Patreon or any of the other ways, check out dailytechnewsshow.com/donate. Don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover. That subreddit address is dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You can email us feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Give us a call. Leave us voicemail, 512-59-DAILY. That's 512-593-2459. And listen to the show live, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 1:30 Pacific, Monday through Friday at mobile.alphageekradio.com. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. We'll be back on Monday with Wired UK's Nate Langson. See you then.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.